the Gospel of Mark. Ideally, we will be finishing chapter 2 today. So, in the next section, it's two events surrounding the Sabbath day. The last several verses of chapter 2 and the first few verses of chapter 3 deal with this particular issue with the Sabbath day. So we're going to take a few moments and look at some of those Sabbath day laws that are talked about in the Old Testament so that we can have a better understanding of what why they were upset with what Jesus was doing. And then we'll go on with a few other things. So right now, one of the things I want to do, we're going to be looking at a lot of verses. So what I want to do is I want to have somebody, I'm going to call on people to turn to a particular verse, a particular passage, and read that in sequence, because this is going to take a minute. Now, who is willing to read? All right. So, let's see. The first one, let's see, Exodus 28 through 11 and Deuteronomy 5, 12 through 15 are pretty much the same. Let's look at the Deuteronomy one. Joy, will you turn to Deuteronomy chapter 5, 12 through 15? And Kathy, Exodus 31. Verses 14 and 15. Harold, Exodus 34, verse 21. And hold that passage. We're going to come back to that one. And let's see, who else? Letha, will you get 35, verse 3? Exodus 35 and verse 3. Sam, I'm going to get you the longer one. Numbers chapter 15, 15, 32 through 36. And let's see, we'll just mention the Nehemiah one. There's one more that I'd like to look at for right now. Who else is willing to read? All right. Kenny, will you go to Deuteronomy 23:25. All right. So, it is important, again, to note some of the laws that were concerning the Sabbath day. First off, they were to do no work. Joy, Deuteronomy 5, 12 through 15.
Keep the Sabbath day to sanctify it as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee. 6 days thou shalt labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thine ox, nor thine ass, nor any of the cattle, nor any stranger that is within thy gates, that thy manservant and thy maidservant may rest as well as thou. And remember that thou wast a servant in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord thy God brought thee out of thence through a mighty hand and by a stretched out arm. Therefore the Lord thy God commanded thee to keep the Sabbath day.
All right, so they were to keep the Sabbath day. And what was the general overarching rule that we see? What were they to do or not to do on the Sabbath?
No work.
Pardon?
Nobody.
Nobody in the land. Not even the animals. They were to rest. They were to take the day off. It was their day off that they were supposed to have. They were to work for 6 days. And then have this seventh day as this day of rest. Now, their day started at sundown, so for us, it would be Friday evening at sundown to Saturday evening at sundown. I once had a Seventh-day Adventist as a roommate, and trying to get him to Help me move a couch was difficult. We had to wait until after sunset on Saturday in order for him to work and do anything like that. But it's something that you would expect a lot of rules and things to develop around. What does it mean, don't do any work? How much work can you do? Obviously, we have to do something in order to survive, in order to work, in order to do things. So what exactly does that mean? How do you get down into the nuts and bolts and figure this out? Well, we'll look at some of the things that the law does say concerning this. So, but first, it was a sign of the covenant with Israel. Who's got Exodus 31, 16, and 17? Oh, I don't have that on there. I have 14 and 15. I see what I got. I wasn't going to put that up there. It was supposed to be a sign of the covenant with Israel, and it was supposed to be an everlasting covenant. So it was supposed to last forever, as it were, at least until the length of the Mosaic covenant was to last. And so we see that it was to end with the cross. Let's see. It was a day to assemble. I don't have that up there either. It was a day to assemble. We see in Leviticus 23, verse 3, that they were to assemble on this particular day, and to, as they called it, the New King James calls it a holy convocation. In other words, this was a day of worship. Among other things they could not do on the Sabbath day, they could not, all right, Exodus 34, 21. I think Harold has that. Yeah.
6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. In plowing time and in harvest you shall rest.
All right. They were not to plow or harvest. Letha, Exodus 35, 3.
You shall kindle no fire throughout your dwellings on the Sabbath day.
All right. They couldn't even start a fire on the Sabbath day. So, now, of course, if they were to eat, they had to prepare that food beforehand. Of course, there's nothing that says they couldn't keep a fire going, I think. So they could start the fire before sundown Friday evening and try to keep it going the rest of the day, but they couldn't kindle that fire on the Sabbath. So they either had to prepare that food ahead of time or prepare that fire ahead of time. So you get to some of these, what we might consider nitpicky rules, but these are things that God did not want them to do on the Sabbath. This was their day of rest. And what was the penalty, I think, Kathy? Exodus 31, 14, and 15. What was the penalty if they did not keep the Sabbath laws?
You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you. Everyone that defileth it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death.
All right, so then we see the penalty for not keeping the Sabbath day. And you can see just how severe that this particular penalty is. Just for not keeping the particular laws, they had the penalty of death. And then we see that carried out in Numbers chapter 15. If you wouldn't mind, Sam.
While the children of Israel went in the wilderness, they found a man that gathered sticks on the Sabbath day. And they found him gathering sticks and brought him to the, I'm sorry, and they that found him gathering sticks brought him unto Moses and Aaron and unto the congregation. And they put him in ward because it was not declared what should be done to him. And the Lord said unto Moses, the man shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones without the camp. And the congregation brought him without the camp, stoned him with stones, and he died, as the Lord commanded Moses.
All right. So, what was his crime? What did he do wrong?
Picking sticks.
He picked up sticks on the Sabbath day. That was the particular of what he had done. He had disobeyed. And we talked about in our Leviticus class, Leviticus lessons on Sunday evening, that when the sentence of death is given upon those who are in open rebellion against the law. And so this man was not apologetic at all. He's like, I'm picking up sticks. I'm going to do it anyway. And, you know, I don't care what God says. And so we see his particular attitude on this. He was not apologetic in any way. And so his penalty was death. It's safe to say that they took the Sabbath day very seriously.
But they did that the day after, right?
The day after what?
After the Sabbath. They didn't stone him on the Sabbath, did they? That'd be work.
Well, I'm not sure what they would consider at that early juncture. At the first point, it does say that they held him, kept him prisoner, essentially, until they figure out what they should do with him. I don't know how long it took for them to figure that out. Sam and then Carol. Okay.
Well, there again, she said stoning was doing something, but that was God's. Another thing God said to do, and if they didn't stone him, then they might all drop dead right there.
And one of the things that I think the Hebrews writer says is that the priests were violating a Sabbath every time they were working on the Sabbath, essentially, because that was their job to doing God's will has a higher priority over resting on the Sabbath. Does that make sense?
You have the same situation with the Samaritan.
Yeah.
Good Samaritan, right? Because the priest and the Levite didn't want to defile themselves
with a potentially dead body, yeah, or the bodily fluids.
With an injured man.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you're right about that. And there's all those situations that says if an ox falls in a pit on a Sabbath day, you pull the ox out because you want to obey the law and do what's right. But the thing I wanted to mention about how seriously they took the Sabbath is hundreds and hundreds of years after these verses, you know, from this period, during the 400 years between the Old Testament and the New Testament, there were situations where the Greeks or the Romans were coming to attack the army of Israel. And they decided that they could attack them on the Sabbath. And there's at least one major case where the entire army of Israel stood still and were slaughtered on the Sabbath. They would not stand up and lift up their sword that they might keep the Sabbath. That's how serious they took it.
And I was working up to that one, because I'm trying to go in sequence a little bit, because we look at how seriously they took it when it was first issued, and then I have Nehemiah up there. I didn't want to turn there because it's a rather lengthy reading, but I'll summarize it a little bit. In Nehemiah 13, so the situation of Nehemiah, the Israelites had been put into Babylonian captivity, and now they have returned, and Nehemiah, at some point after their return, serves as governor and is trying to reinstitute some of the laws that had been forgotten, I suppose, in that period of time. And of course, the apostasy that occurred quite a few times during the course of the kingdom years. So he, in the mid-400s B.C., he was vehement in upholding the Sabbath laws. And if you want to read this later, Nehemiah 13, verses 15 through 22, he scolded the people for not keeping the Sabbath. He shut the gates to Jerusalem and posted guards to ensure that the Sabbath be kept, because he didn't want any selling or trading or anything of that nature, buying or selling during the Sabbath day, because that was a form of work. And so the merchants, in fact, at some point, the merchants, I believe, who weren't Jews, were hanging out outside the city walls. And he's like, what are you doing here? Get out of here. And he posted these guards, Levites, in order to protect and sanctify the Sabbath day at that time. And then at some point, yes, there was an army that had come to destroy the Israelites and decided to do so, the Jews at that point, and decided to do so on the Sabbath day, and they didn't do anything. So at some point, they allowed themselves to be slaughtered. So a little bit later, they made some allowances saying, okay, if somebody fights you, you have the opportunity to fight back. So they changed their tradition a little bit to help with that.
Stephen.
Yes.
In your studies, have you ever seen where it said how big are rocks and how long it took to stone somebody? Because just throwing rocks at somebody could take all day to kill them.
Well, it's not going to be gravel.
It's not going to be bowling balls either.
Well, it's got to be something that you can't throw.
You have to hit them right in the head to kill them.
Well, immediately, yeah. So part of the reason for having a stoning like that is it's kind of the same principle that you would have for whenever you they would have a line and you would shoot. Firing squad, thank you. I was trying to think of the word. The same principle as a firing squad. because you don't want the guilt to be on one person for killing that individual, because it's not the individual, it is the group as a directive from God in the case of the Israelites, or a directive from the higher echelons in the military for a firing squad. So you don't have one person doing the killing, you have everybody as a result of that. So it would take some rocks about, I suppose, about a good size, and you'd have everybody throw them, and as a result, it wouldn't take all day necessarily, but it would take a little while, and you're not sure which rock was the killing blow. It could be all of them all together, or maybe individually, building up.
It wouldn't be nearly as much punishment if you went out instantly. The idea was to let it last a little bit, feel some pain.
Maybe.
I've seen somewhere, like everything else is someone's idea, they were tied to a post and on a circular pattern where the rocks were used over and over.
Oh, yeah, that's very likely. You know,
that's just where they executed people.
Yeah.
And they did it on, a regular basis. Because it justified having a designated area to do it in.
Well, there are some, it's kind of like the stocks in that kind of way, where that was a fairly easy place to spot in a 19th century village.
Cast a stone.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you never had did that.
Yeah.
I didn't think anybody knew you did.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah.
Just one thing that we oftentimes don't think about is the community. So it says the whole community.
Yeah.
So if we were under that law today, that would mean all of us, literally all of us, would be required to go do that. And you're standing around together, throwing rocks at somebody, breaking their bones, bruising them, and eventually killing them. The intensity of the lesson for the community was very high. This is not, you know, today when people get executed, they get executed, no one sees them, they're off somewhere in some prison, you just hear about it on the news. It's sterile, you know, it's all far away. This was right in your face. Everybody saw it. The family saw it, the kids saw it, everybody saw it.
Definitely a deterrent from breaking the law.
And that would show the children and the families and everything stand around how serious this is.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
The kids would learn, I better not do that.
Yeah. Yeah. By Jesus' time, the Mishnah records that there were 39 work-related activities that would be violations of the Sabbath. Now, of course, the Mishnah is their traditions, and it wasn't recorded until about AD 200. So, but we can reasonably assume that many of those were still in effect, or were in effect in the time of Jesus. 39 work-related activities. Among these violations were reaping and threshing, which the Old Testament does kind of talk about. I told you to hold on to Exodus 34:21. Do you still have that? but it kind of mentions that as well.
6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall not, you shall rest. In plowing time and in harvest time you shall rest.
All right, so this was one of the things, reaping and threshing was in the Mishnah, and it's kind of alluded here, plowing and harvesting kind of mentioned, is mentioned in the book of Exodus. All right, so now we're going to get into our text. With 15 minutes left, I'll probably push it, but 15 minutes left in class. Let's go ahead and read Mark chapter 2, verses 23 through 28. Whoever's got that, please.
And it came to pass that he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath, and his disciples began as they went to pluck the ears of corn. And the Pharisees said unto him, Behold, why do they on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? And he said unto them, Have ye never read that David did when he had need, and it was an hungered, and he and they that were with him? How he went into the house of God the days of Abiathar the high priest, and did eat the showbread, which is not lawful to eat, but for the priest, and gave also to them that which were with him. And he said unto them, The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath.
All right, so knowing all that we have studied here and talked about in the last little while, did Jesus and his disciples, did they sin in this particular instance?
Well, Jesus did not sin. The scripture tells us that, so we have a solid answer on that one.
Okay. How about his disciples, though?
Yeah.
What did they do?
All right, so that's sort of a thought question as we think about this. The Pharisees certainly thought that they did sin. Why are you doing this? This is against what they consider the law, Exodus 34:21. This is against what what they considered to be the law, especially with the tradition of the Mishnah. So another question, though. As they're watching this, are they just following Jesus around, waiting to catch him on something? I mean, you kind of get that idea. I mean, you're just following them, watching them as they pluck heads. I mean, are they just kind of just trying to look at you, trying to catch them in something? It certainly seems that way, and it suggests that they were in the next chapter, chapter 3, verse 2. It does kind of suggest that a little bit. All right, so their alleged sin, was not the theft. So let's look at, Kenny, if you got Deuteronomy 23:25.
If you enter your neighbor's grain field, you may pick kernels with your hands, but you must not put a sickle to his standing grain.
All right, so the alleged theft is not plucking the heads of grain. It's not going through and taking a little bit here or there, because the Old Testament allows for this. Just don't go overboard. Just don't take a sickle and harvest a whole bunch. Just take a little bit of what you need. Alvin?
I just kind of popped into my weird head. But,
oh, okay.
I mean, these guys go into the cornfield, rip off. I mean, if it was my cornfield, I'd be a little upset.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem, I don't know, maybe I'm looking at it.
It's kind of like, the way I picture it, it's kind of like you're walking, you're going somewhere, and you happen to see an orchard, and you pluck an apple from it, and you walk away. It's kind of like that, in my view. I mean, you're not supposed to be punished for that, but if you get a whole bunch of people and you take all the apples from the tree, then you've got an issue. But if you just take one or two, that's not an issue. Yes?
There's a whole series of scripture where it talks about when you harvest your grain, don't go into every corner.
Yeah.
Don't go shake the olive trees twice, and leave it. And it says it's there for the stranger and the widow.
Right.
And so there was a principle that it was okay for someone to come into your field and to satisfy their hunger.
Right.
That principle is in Scripture. It's taught.
And the book of Ruth has a big part of that, right, too. Talks about that.
But obviously, if you take a sickle, what are you doing? I'm going to go harvest it and sell it, right?
Yeah.
I'm stealing at that point. If you're just going to satisfy your hunger, that was allowed.
Yeah. And Jesus certainly, was he a rich man? Rich in terms of money?
No.
No, no. He was a poor preacher. His disciples weren't much more wealthy. So as they were walking through, they needed to satisfy their hunger. They go through, they see this grain field, and they get some grain.
They took enough to satisfy their hunger.
Right.
Enough to pay their bills.
Right. So their alleged sin was reaping and threshing on the Sabbath day. As a side note, this took place mid to late spring between the Passover and Pentecost. If you remember the Jewish calendar that I passed out last year now at some point, the time of harvesting for grain is around that time, in between Passover around March and April to Pentecost, May or June. All right?
Question.
Yes.
If they were walking by the vineyard or whatever, and at least you got an apple or whatever, weren't they under the same law for us? Weren't they supposed to do all this the day before? Gather some apples in your pocket, you know.
Ah, well, that's the crux of the matter, and we'll definitely get into that. that's the issue that the Pharisees bring up. So let's see. Jesus brings an example of the Old Testament, and so that's what we'll look at now. An example from the Old Testament to justify his actions. We see this in verses 25 and 26, and this leaves us with a very important principle. What are the three ways in which we understand authority? Things are authorized in Scripture. Command, example, and necessary inference or implication. That's right. So here we have an example of an example. We have an example of Jesus taking an approved example. Was David an approved example? Yeah, he was a prophet, he was a king, he was God's anointed. So he was an approved example, and he was looking at that and saying, hey, David did something similar, and so I'm doing this, and so we are justified. Now, we'll consider the circumstances around what is going on here. All right, so we did talk about this event that Jesus is referencing in our chronology class. Do you remember the circumstances around what David was doing? It says, reading that verse again, have you never read what David did when he was in need and hungry, he and those with him? How he went into the house of God, the tabernacle, in the days of Abiathar, the high priest, and ate the showbread, which is not lawful to eat except for the priests, and also gave some to those who were with him. So do you remember that event that Jesus is referencing here? So that's in 1 Samuel chapter 21, verses 1 through 6. And in that account, the circumstances, the context, David is fleeing. David is running away. He's running away from King Saul, who is trying to kill him. This is hot on the heels of when Jonathan had confirmed this desire that his father Saul had to kill David, and they had a tearful farewell, David and Jonathan, and David leaves, and he has some men with him. And he goes to the area of Nob. And Nob is where the tabernacle was at this time. Who was high priest? Do you remember? I'm sorry, what did you say, Aletha?
Was it Abimelech?
Close. It was Ahimelech. Yeah, it's an H. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the Abiathar, the high priest, but Ahimelech was the guy in the tabernacle at the time.
So, the high priest at this time, so people like to look at this and say, oh, this is a contradiction, this is a problem. It is not. Because what we see is Ahimelech is the high priest at this time, at this specific time. that is going on here. But in Mark, it doesn't say that Abiathar was the high priest at the time that David did this. It says Abiathar the high priest, because Abiathar later did become the high priest. Okay? So Abiathar ends up being, and I have some verses up here that talk about what happens to the priests afterward. So if you remember, Saul, one of his men spots David here at the tabernacle and notes that Ahimelech was helping David. And so Saul hears about this. He goes to Nob and tries to look for David and shakes down the priests and ends up having them killed. Remember, if you remember, the priests, the Israelites, weren't willing to go along with this. It had to be Doeg the Edomite, the foreigner who was working for Saul, who ended up doing this. And so the only one to escape, it was all the priests at that particular place, the only one to escape was Abiathar, who was the son of Ahimelech. And Abiathar goes, and he joins David and his band and tells him what happens. And of course, David is sad because he feels like he's responsible. But what we see is that Abiathar is then made the high priest because he's the next in line, and he becomes the high priest throughout David's reign, throughout the rest of Saul's reign and David's reign, and the little bit of Solomon's until he sides with Adonijah instead of Solomon. And I have that up there in 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 26 and 27. Abiathar Solomon says Abiathar deserves death because of what he did, siding against God's anointed, siding against Solomon. But because he was struggled with David, because he was the high priest, then he let him live. He just made Zadok, I believe, the high priest after him. And then we have Leviticus. Let's see. Someone turn to Leviticus chapter 24. This talks about the showbread that David had eaten and gives the law that David perhaps violated. So please read Leviticus chapter 24, verses 5 through 8. I have 9 up there. We'll read 9 in a second.
And you shall take fine flour and bake 12 cakes on it. 2/10 of an ephah shall be in each cake. You shall set them in 2 rows, 6 in a row, on a pure gold table before the Lord. And put pure frankincense on each row, that it may be on the bread for a memorial, an offering made by fire to the Lord. Every Sabbath he shall bring it. He shall set it in order before the Lord continually, being taken from the children of Israel by an everlasting covenant.
All right. So we note here that the table of showbread was in the tabernacle, and it was baked fresh once a week. All right, baked fresh. And then go ahead and read verse 9.
And it shall be for Aaron and his sons, and they shall eat it in a holy place, for it is most holy to him, from the offerings of the Lord made by fire, by a perpetual statute.
All right, so perpetual statute. The priests were to dispose of the old bread by eating it, and it was not lawful for anyone else to eat this bread, just the priests. All right, so then, why was it okay for David and his men to eat it? Because maybe David did wrong here, but it seems that Jesus is sanctioning what David did. And in fact, another passage, I think Matthew's account of this, specifically states that that what he did was righteous, what he did was okay. So, why was it okay for David to do this? The key is in verse 25. Well, and a little bit later, but for this specific thing.
Verse 25
is later. Sorry, Mark 2, 25. Because he was in need and hungry. He was in need and hungry. So, why was it okay for Jesus and his disciples to pluck the heads of grain on the Sabbath? because they were in need and hungry. Plus, as we talked about last week, it's inappropriate for them to fast at this time. They're on their way, they're on their way to worship on the Sabbath, and we see that they hadn't eaten yet. And so they're on their way, and they grab a little bit on their way, and as they're heading to worship. All right. We have another important principle in verse 27, and we'll talk more about the justification here, and maybe we'll have to talk about it next week because we're low on time. All right. We see the purpose of these ceremonial rituals is, well, let's look at verse 27. And he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath." This is an important principle that we see here. The purpose of these ceremonial rituals is not so that man can be a slave to them, or especially to the traditions built around them. The purpose of these things is to serve man. The purpose of the Sabbath is to serve us, serve man. Serve the Israelites, of course, because they were under that law, so that they could rest. Our needs come before ritual obedience. But this man was gathering up sticks. What do you suppose he was going to do gathering up sticks? He was going to start a fire, right? He was going to work. But he wasn't supposed to. He could have found some other way to accommodate his need. All right, and plus, he did so in open rebellion. Our needs come before ritual obedience. Can that be abused? Yes, it can be abused. Pardon?
Because who gets to decide?
Who gets to decide? So, let us make every effort to obey our Lord. Any exception that we have must be rare. Does that make sense? We're not in violation. If it's a legitimate need for some other, you know, if we have a particular rule that we are supposed to follow, if it's, for instance, I don't mean if you're very hungry, you should steal something. I'm not saying that. One of the examples we have, I'll go into an example next week. I think we're out of time, way over time.
Yes, I'm still confused about. You know, why
don't they
fill the pockets today for the trip tomorrow?
Okay.
I'm still interested in that.
Yeah.
That's what everybody else has to do. You know,
yeah.
Not gather anything, get what you need today for tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe explain a little bit.
All right. So hopefully I will next week. Again, we're out of time. Just a couple more points I've got here. It is not every day that David ate the showbread. It is not every week that we ought to miss worship. Right? And that's the parallel that I draw here. If we miss worship, it's got to be for a good reason. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. So we don't know how often Jesus and his disciples plucked grain on the Sabbath. But it does not seem like it was a regular occurrence. It seems like it was a rare thing. Perhaps one day they just didn't have an opportunity to gather anything on Friday. And all they had was, or maybe they...
I have this thing of, you know, what if your chief's a man that you should disobey? You know, I'm just really puzzled about that. Everybody has to get it today for tomorrow, but they didn't. They didn't get it today for tomorrow.
Yeah. And maybe they did. And maybe they did and they lost it somehow, or they ate it. Or maybe they didn't have that opportunity. Maybe they couldn't find anything on the way on Friday, the day before. There are different possibilities. And again, this wasn't a regular occurrence.
It's like going along and pulling a stalk of wheat and getting his teeth or something.
Yeah, but it was a but the law said no no harvesting, no reaping. That's not exactly what's going on here either. They're just picking up the... Anyway, we're out of time. They're just picking up the grain and shucking it a little bit and eating it. That's all they were doing. Anyway, we're out of time.